In my last couple of years of school, the Lord has put a passion in my heart for intergenerational ministry. And if you know what that is, or if you can break the words down, it's ministry done through multiple generations, whether that be on a Sunday morning, having multiple generations present, or the opportunity to have things like mentorship relationships, where the older generation is imparting wisdom and knowledge to the younger generation in the act of faith formation. And that's what I'm speaking about today, is mentorship, or the easier way to understand it as relational discipleship. So, join me. If you have your Bible, paper or glass, Deuteronomy 6, 6 through 7 is kind of where I'm beginning. And I'll give you a second to get there. I cheated, and while I was telling you my story, I got there. So, beat ya. So, thus is the word of the Lord. And these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. So there's a guy who developed his entire philosophy of ministry based on this verse. And it's all about family discipleship. It's all about growth in home. But we know that growth outside of the home, spiritual development and formation outside of the home, is super important. And in 2 Timothy 1:5, Paul says to Timothy, a pastor who he's been mentoring, he says, the pastor Timothy received, I should probably go there. That's my note on it. That's not a direct quote. Sorry, I was just about to read you the Gospel of Brandon. Okay, where are we at? If you want to try and beat me there, 2 Timothy 1:5. Boom. Thanks, Josh. Come on. Yeah, so, let's give him a round of applause. I really appreciate that. I don't know if Joe does it, so don't go doing that when Joe's preaching, but if I'm preaching and you can beat me there, go for it. So, I'm gonna find it and read it again for the people watching online. So, I'm sorry. Trying to get there is super difficult. 2 Timothy, right here, I got it. So it says, I am reminded of your sincere faith, the faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well. So Paul is encouraging Timothy, saying, hey, this is awesome because generationally, through your family, faith has been passed down, and faith has been cultivated in you. And your parents and your grandparents have poured that into you, and now you are a strong man of Jesus. You are a strong man in the church, and he's actually one of the pastors, and this is actually a letter of encouragement, because outside of the family, built on that foundation of faith, passed down generationally through his parents, Paul entered into a relationship with Timothy, where he passed down knowledge, because Paul was a very well-educated man. He was one of the most well-educated people, like, in that class of just, like, top-notch, like, went to the best schools, went to the best, like, mixers with all of the smart people, and just, like, everything. He was a smart guy. So could you imagine Timothy, a guy who's been raised by his mother and his grandmother and had faith passed down to him, is now getting to learn from a guy who has all of the teachings from the rabbis, all of the teachings from the apostles, has met with Jesus, Damascus Road, come on, and now he gets to be taught by this guy. What a moment! Woo! Oh, that fires me up. So, it is clear through biblical text that discipleship starts at home. That's where the foundation is built. That is where people just like pour foundational stuff into their kids. They get to learn the scriptures. They get to learn like everything. But then it's also clear, and this is represented in studies as well. Barna Group did a study on this, that kids and students and young people need a solid group of adults who care about them outside of their family unit for not only like social development and proper understanding of the way the world works and healthy like mental states and stuff like that, also for resilient faith formation. That's super important. Yes. So this is seen, mentorship relationships are seen throughout the Bible in different ways, and it's in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Some of the people that we can look at are Moses and Joshua. It's clear that Moses brought Joshua under his wing and said, here's all the things that you need to know to lead Israel, because Joshua was going to take the mantle on as leader of these people, this million-person nation, absolutely ridiculous, and take them into the Promised Land, a place where Moses actually couldn't even lead them to. So as we can see, generational mentorship and those relationships lead to a greater capacity than what is achieved by the people who came before you, because you get your own knowledge and you get the knowledge of the Spirit and you can go forward and you can do more than what the one person who taught you could do. So, boom, that's just a little tidbit off the noggin. So, next, we look at Elijah and Elisha. Super, super similar names. I mix them up all the time. If you do that, no judgment, okay? That's like just the thing. But Elijah brought Elisha under his wing, and it says, this is another example. It says at the end, when Elijah gave his robe to Elisha, and Elijah got carried up in a chariot to heaven, that Elisha got a double portion. Woo! Double portion of the Spirit. Come on. That's just another example of the people who you're passing faith down to being able to accomplish more than you're able to. And that's not a slight against anybody. Elijah did awesome things. He called out a bear and just like, three bears, ate a bunch of kids. Crazy. That's not the coolest thing he ever did. If you're interested, read the Book of Chronicles. It's super cool. I'm sorry. It's okay, I just choked on coffee, we're good. So, we can also see this in Paul and Timothy, as I've already mentioned. And finally, if you're going to base your life off of anybody, you might as well base it off of Jesus. And Jesus had a 3-year-long mentoring relationship where he did everything with 12 people. And then inside of that 12 people, there were 3 people who he really focused on. And you see from them, Jesus even says in his own words, you're going to go out and do more than I ever did because there's more of you. We can multiply, we can grow, and you're going to do way more than I was ever able to accomplish because we're empowered by the same Spirit that Jesus was given. That's a whole nother sermon, man. Whew. So as 21st century Christians, we do a really good job of being Davids and Jonathans. But we do a really bad job at being Paul and Timothy. I say that because David and Jonathan were best friends. Jonathan was the son of King Solomon. David was the guy who's going to come up. He was anointed as king before. If you don't know the story, it's a super cool story. Read it. 1 Samuel. But David and Jonathan were equals. They were able to pour into one another. They were able to be friends. They were able to talk. They were at the same life stage. They were doing all this stuff. Me and my brother went out hunting last Saturday. And I don't like to call it a hunting trip. I like to call it a peer mentoring adventure. Because we're at the same life stage. We're both in ministry. We both got married in the last 2 years. We're kind of going through the same things. And we're able to bounce ideas off of each other. Like, I've been married for longer than him, so I have a little bit more, not a whole lot, just a year, but it's like that. I've been through these arguments, don't do it. But it's just, that's pretty much the only wisdom I have, is avoid this argument, it's not worth your time. We walked down a mountain and we spent 45 minutes just talking about life and talking about ministry and talking about marriage and what it all means. And it's awesome, and we do a great job of that. We meet with our friends, we talk to them about stuff, we talk about life and all that stuff, but we do a really poor job of being Paul and Timothy, where we find somebody who's less than or at a different, at a lower life stage than us, and we say, hey, I want to help you. I want to guide you through life. I want to give you this wisdom that I wish I had, and I want to give you this opportunity to experience life through me so you don't have to do all this garbage, okay? So that's just a little thing. We're pretty bad as a church at engaging in intergenerational ministry. We do a really good job of siloing and saying we want all these different ministries. We have the youth ministry that hangs out downstairs. We have the kids ministry downstairs. We have all these different things going on, and we do a really good job of separating, making it age demographic based. But then, like, we have no unison. We have no body, and that's just hands hanging out with hands and feet hanging out with feet. And when I was a young man, okay, I was probably about 14 years old, okay? Okay, so I was about 14 years old, and there was a guy in my church who, he was a board member, he was really close with my dad, and he was also my boss. And I worked at Dairy Queen, and he was this guy who I had known my entire life. His kids grew up in the church. My dad was their youth pastor. All this stuff. Really good relationship. And one day, he was like, Brandon, I want to take you out for dinner. And I was like, crap, I messed up at work. This is a reprimand dinner. And he took me out for dinner, and he starts imparting all of this knowledge to me. I'm like, how does this help me with working at Dairy Queen? And at the end of it, he's like, I want you to have this book. And he gave me the book, I forget what it's called. It was a super popular book, and it's about young men becoming strong men of God. And I had no idea why he gave me this book. I was like, how's this going to help me with making blizzards? This doesn't make any sense. And looking back on it now, I can recognize that he wanted to engage in a mentoring relationship. And I was just too dumb to realize it. And if I could speak to 14-year-old Brandon, I would say, you hang out with this guy as much as you can and learn from him and gain wisdom from him and knowledge from him. Because there are so many things that happened in my life that if I had somebody, and I look back, and one of the reasons I became a youth pastor is because I didn't have anybody, and I said, I want to be that person for somebody. I want to be that person who walks through the mud with somebody. And looking back on it, I can recognize a couple of things that caused me to not recognize it. And first, there was uncommunicated expectations. So, and if you're watching this, Will, I love you. There were uncommunicated expectations. And that was just, we didn't talk about what it was going to look like. We didn't talk about what was happening. We didn't talk about what was going on. I thought it was a work thing. He thought it was a spiritual mentorship thing. It was difficult. There was a miscommunication there, and there was a lack of communication on intention. Like, was this something that was going to just happen once? Was it just like, read this book and live like Jesus? Or was it going to be a, hey, I want to meet with you once a month. I want to meet with you once a month, and I want to chat about life, and I want to chat about what's going on. So, looking back on it, those were the issues, not the issues, just the miscommunications and the shortcomings of that relationship that I had. But in the book, The Fine Art of Mentoring by Gordon MacDonald, he states that in contrast with the past, the mentoring function today is in short supply. Today, what passes for people development happens in a classroom. And the certification of a person is by diploma from an institution rather than the stamp of approval from an overseer or a mentor. We went from a culture of personal relationships for everything. When you were 14 years old, 120 years ago, you would go and you would connect with a stonemason, or you would connect with a blacksmith, or you would connect with a house builder, and you would spend every single day with that person. And they would teach you about life. They would teach you about work. They would teach you how to be a good husband. They would teach you how to be a good man. They would teach you how to be a good Christian. But we've moved away from that. We've moved away from the human connection. And there are books upon books that talk about how we're in the most connected time of our lives, and people are at an all-time low for isolation. And there's no real-life connection. Like, you can look at your screen and you can look at your friends all day long and it's all just great, but there's no connection. I like to use the word garbage to talk about that. Paul would use the word skubala. And if you know what that means, we have an inside joke now. I think that Joe knows what that word means, and I think he's chuckling under his mask. Yeah, he is. He's nodding his head, yes. So, what is mentorship? This is a question that we have to ask ourselves if we're going to talk about, if I'm going to bash the church in the 21st century and say, we suck at this, then we need to talk about what it is so we can get better at it. So, what is mentorship? I asked a number of my friends from school, I asked a number of mentors and professors and people I admire and look up to, for what their definition of mentorship is. And let me tell you, there's a common thread. See if you can find it. So first, this is from my friend Graham. Love you, G. An honest relationship with honest conversation about life, faith, and leadership. Okay? There's the first one. Second one. This is from our good old pastor, Joe. Appreciate you dearly, my friend. I don't know if we've gotten to the love stage yet. Ready? So, Joe says, a relationship with a person who has something that you aspire to emulate, a skill, a characteristic, etc., in an informal or a formal manner. Okay? So something that you want to emulate, something that you either gain from that person in a structured time or an unstructured time, just being around that person. Okay? Here we go. This is from Doug Frederick. He's a G. He's gangster. Super cool guy. If you're ever in Langley, go to Recovery Church and meet Doug Frederick. He's awesome. So, ready? He says, mentorship is one individual taking responsibility for their own spiritual growth and maturity by submitting humbly in discipleship to a seasoned, wise mentor who has agreed upon and is open to meeting and building relationship with the mentee who takes the responsibility to engage with the mentor. Keeping up? The mentor's role is to love and believe in growth of the mentee, even in hard conversations and actions that the mentee needs to take. Okay? So that one's a bit more technical. But yeah. A personal decision to take ownership of your faith and choosing to learn from somebody who is seasoned and wise. And that's straight from Proverbs. He actually wrote in the middle of there, Proverbs, in parentheses, but I didn't add it because it might have been confusing, but I see it's not now. And then from my mentor in school, he says, a mutual partnership focused on growing in life and faith. And he said he was going to watch this, so I love you, Andrew. I miss you. And we'll chat soon. But yes, a mutual partnership growing in life and faith. And if you caught the key theme, it is growth in life and faith through an established relationship, whether it's an informal relationship or a formal relationship, whether you're talking about life or you're talking about faith or you're talking about anything. It's the passing down of knowledge from one person to another. And it's the seasoned individual passing knowledge to the newbie or the greenhorn. And why is this important? As mentioned previously, research is clear that students need a supportive group of adults for healthy social and cognitive development as well as strong faith formation. Students need trusted people to talk to. A study done on info comprehension states that we remember 20% of what we hear. 20%, that's pretty good. That's like, you could probably pass like a pretty good course with 20%. Maybe not like a bachelor's level course, but like high school, you pass with 20% of the knowledge that you learn. But we comprehend and we store 70% of what we discuss, what we have conversation about, what we talk about, what we grow in. You get what I'm saying. So no offense to parents, but kids need people outside of your family unit who they can trust and they can have a conversation with, because kids don't necessarily want to talk with their parents about everything that they're going through. But they might talk to that person at church who believes in them, or that person from youth group who goes to their soccer games and really believes that they have something unique about them. So as another study, I'm going off on all the studies. Another study done states that both being connected to someone who encourages faith and feeling valued by people who are older than them is paramount, like fundamental for resilient faith formation. And that was a study done specifically about churches. And it's crazy, because all you need to do is connect with a young person. And it doesn't even have to be like Jackson or Ethan sitting in the front row. It doesn't have to be them. No, I'm not slighting you guys. I'm not slighting you guys. But I'm just saying, it's connection with somebody who's younger than you. Because I might be like having conversations with them and mentoring them and doing all this stuff, doesn't mean that I'm there. It doesn't mean that I'm fully there. I'm not like, I haven't reached peak, because I can learn stuff from Joe, and Joe can learn stuff from his mentors, and his mentors can learn stuff from their mentors, and it's trickle-down faith. And it's passing on knowledge from generation to generation and expanding the church and growing together. So it's important that it's not just young people, but that it's other people as well. Like, if you're 35 in this room and you don't have anybody who's teaching you anything, you're doing something wrong. Because there are people who are older than you, who have lived through a lot more than you, who can put things into perspective, and they can give you wise advice about things, and they can give you all of this different knowledge that you might have to struggle for. But they could just give it to you because they struggled for it. So that's a little tidbit for you. So what does it look like to mentor somebody? Like, what the heck does it mean? Mentorship can take all sorts of just different kinds of frames. You don't have to put mentorship into a box. You don't have to just go and sit and have coffee with somebody. You don't have to just go and enjoy a nice walk on the beach and just talk about everything, skip some stones. No, mentorship can really look like whatever you want. I once went on a fishing trip with my mentor, and we just hiked for like 3 hours, and we didn't catch anything, but it was awesome. And mentorship can take any frame you want. Mentorship can be done over coffee, if that's what you want. Mentorship can be done while you're building a canoe. I heard that the men's group built a canoe once. That's awesome. Bring that back. Mentorship can be done on the riverbank. Mentorship can be done in the duck blind. Mentorship can be done anywhere, because it's the relationship where you are talking about faith in life. There's no box to be put around mentorship. Mentorship usually starts when you have something that other people want. So there's a guy who I'm currently in conversation with, and the first thing that I heard about him was that, one, he planted an awesome church and loves his community. Two, he's an awesome fisherman. So those are two things that I'm like, man, I really want to learn how to love my community, and I love fishing. So what if I connected with this guy and we just went fishing and hung out once a month? That would be super awesome. And we could talk about life, and we could talk about marriage, and we can talk about faith and all this different stuff, and we can talk about ministry, and that's how I can grow. So mentorship usually starts when you see something in somebody that you would like, or you have something that you can offer to people. So if you have something to offer, find somebody who's interested in that. If you're really good at woodworking and there's a student or a young person or even somebody who's like 5 years younger than you, ask them if they want to hang out and woodwork with you. That would be sick. But the important part is that mentorship is done through relationship, okay? It's not restricted to anything. So I'm going to just list off some helpful do's and don'ts of mentorship, okay? Because if we're going to start being a church who mentors people, we might as well have some ground rules. Ready? First do, take things slow, okay? As the relationship grows and trust is formed, there's going to be more option for, like, conversation. They're going to trust you more. They're going to be willing to give you more information, all this stuff. Don't go into a mentorship relationship and sit down and be like, so, tell me everything. Like, it's just like, okay, here you go. I have a friend who, this is a tangent, and Brielle told me not to do tangents, but one more. I have a friend who went to a discipleship program overseas, and he's like, the first thing that you do when you show up is you sit in a circle and you literally just list off everything that you've ever done in your life that is sinful. And it's just like no relationship, no growth, no nothing. You just spill your guts. Don't do that. Ready? This might sound counterintuitive to what I just said, but don't be afraid to talk about the hard stuff, okay? If the mentee wants to go there, as a mentor, it's your responsibility to just be willing to go there. You don't have to have all the answers, but you need to be willing to wrestle through that with that person. Do be teachable. Just because you are a mentor does not mean that you can't learn a thing or two. Right? We're called to be humble. And just because, like Joe said last week, just because that's the way it's been done doesn't mean there's not a different way to do it. Right? God might be doing something new, and if we're stuck, then it's just like, shoot. I guess that's, the church is going to die. That's it. Okay? So do be teachable. Don't feel like you need to have all the answers. Some things you'll know. Some things you will not. Some things you'll need to say, hey, can we talk about that next time? And give me some time to research it. Or give me some time to think about it for myself. Do have a mentor of your own. I do. My older brother is my mentor. We're peer mentors. Paul and Barnabas, baby. Whether you are older and a sage in the church, or you are a peer mentor, you need to have somebody that you're talking through life with. You need to have somebody who's encouraging you in your faith, encouraging you to grow, all this different stuff. And finally, don't fake it. Okay, mentees can smell when you're faking it. Okay? Just because you don't know everything doesn't mean that they're going to walk away from you. And if you're just like, meh, here you go, this is my best answer, it's not beneficial for either party. So don't fake it. Be willing to say, I'm sorry, I don't know. We don't have to have all the answers. We aren't God, and we don't have to try to be. And an added benefit to mentorship is that when you walk with another person through faith, and you wrestle, and you do all this stuff, and you talk, you have to make a decision in your own heart to work through it. Because if there's something that the mentee is dealing with that you haven't dealt with, or that you are like, I don't want to go there, then your faith isn't growing either. And the beautiful thing about mentor-mentee relationships is that we can feed each other. We can encourage each other. We can grow together. So, be willing to wrestle through your own stuff and explain why you believe things, explain why you do them, because maybe you believe something your entire life, and when you try to explain it, it just doesn't make any sense. So we're going to just take a little opportunity right now. And I know this is a little bit different, but Braille's just going to play in the background. And I'm just going to encourage everybody to just spend some time listening to the Holy Spirit. Like, I so badly want to see young people being poured into. And I so badly want to see a church that is unified and not isolated to their different age categories. So if you would join me in just asking God what the next step is, either you need to find a mentee or a mentor, ask God to put a name on your heart. Ask God to bring you closer to somebody. And just as we take this time, and as we reflect, just think about that name. Start praying for that person. Start Start interceding on their behalf. So we're just going to take some time.